Side 4, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 131. The greedy old hare then went on to strip a small apple tree. He returned to Juka's tribe about early noon and found them recuperating their strength by dozing in the pleasant green shade. Fleetscut stuffed down apples as if it were his last day on earth, sour juice foaming out over his whiskers.
Groof! Slick! Sloop! Got you napping, eh? Well, no hard feelings, you miserable bunch of cads. I could do with a spot of the old shut-eye myself, what?
Spitting pips and stalks, he lay down and instantly fell into a deep slumber. Afternoon shadows were beginning to lengthen when Juka stirred. She shook Ruro and Betel.
Best make a move before eventide. Which way now?
Ruro retrieved the parchment of bark scroll which was hanging from Fleetscut's tunic.
It says here, discover then a stream wolf's ford, tug thrice upon the royal cord. Where wouldst thou suppose that to be?
Juka judged by the sun shadows.
Northeast has served us well thus far. We'll continue that way. Betel, get them up on their paws. A ford means fresh water. That's good.
None too gently, she turned and roused the old hare with a few kicks of her footpaw.
Waken thyself, windbag, or we leave you here.
Fleetscut came awake, doubled up with agonizing stomach cramps, which he let every beast know about with long, piteous wailing.
Ow! 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 Oof! Oof! I knew I'd die! We made these woodlands too late, you chaps. Ow, 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 ooch. Your whole pal's a goner. Bury me here, please, quick as you can. Ooh, anti-trampin' plague, that's what 'tis. Ooh.
Obligingly, several squirrels began kicking leaf loam over the suffering hare. He sprang up, spitting out leaves.
Get off, you rotters! What do you think you're up to?
Thou askest to bury thee. We would not deny thee that.
Aye, Long Ears, thou'rt green in the gills. Methinks thou'rt close to dark forest gates.
Fleetscut picked wet brown leaves from between his ears.
Dark forest gates, indeed! Ouch, ouch, ooch! Oh, me poor belly!
Ruro grinned and squeezed her friend's shoulders pityingly.
Couldn't have been anything that thou ate, of course.
Fleetscut straightened up indignantly, then immediately folded over again, hugging his stomach.
Might have been a blighted worm in one of those apples.
Betel winked at Ruro.
Oh, pray tell, sir, which one?
Thou great fodder bag, thee ate a whole tree full, every one of them sour. 'Twould have slain any other beast.
Juka leaned on her broad-bladed spear impatiently.
Ruro, do something for the bladder-headed oaf, or methinks he'll wail on until the crack of doom.
Fleetscut sat back against a sycamore, holding his distended stomach with both paws. He shut his eyes and mouth firmly, but not before remarking pointedly,
"Madam, I'm not eating that mishmash. Are you trying to hasten me flippin' demise, what?"
Each of the squirrels had gleefully contributed a trickle of their water. Ruro had a small fire going, over which she was boiling hound's tongue leaves, milkwort, green alkanet blossoms, and two sulfur-tuffed mushrooms in an old iron war helmet. The smell this concoction produced when she mashed it was horrendous. Juka nodded to Betel and Groot as Ruro removed the helmet from the flames.
"Take hold of the blockhead and grip him tight. Ruro, make him take it all."
Betel and Grood held Fleetscut's head, while other squirrels piled on and sat on his limbs. Betel pinched the old hare's nostrils so that he could not breathe. The patient held out until he seemed fit to burst, then opened his mouth wide.
"Assassins! Hare murderers! War-oop!"
Ruro poured the offensive mixture down Fleetscut's throat like a ministering angel, while Juka looked on in grim satisfaction. Fleetscut bucked and writhed to no avail.
Ruro managed to get the last of it down his mouth and sprang to one side as the hare began shuddering all over. "Let him go! Stand back, every beast!" Fleet Scut leapt up like a startled fawn, scut twitching, ears erect, eyes popping wide, jaws quivering. He shot off among the trees like a shaft from a bow.
"Foul toads! Pollywoggles! Great barrel-bummed poisoners! Whoa-whoa!
Brrr!"
Moments later, he lolloped back, rather unsteadily, with a wan smile pasted on his drooping features.
"Never killed me, did you, smarty-tails, what?"
A stern voice boomed from the edge of the camp.
"Belay! Put one paw near the rabbit, and we'll drop you all where you stand."
A single-bladed hatchet thudded into the ground between Fleet Scut and Juka. Instantly, the woodland was thick with hedgehogs. The squirrels were surrounded. The hog leader, a massive creature, made twice as big by the grass and leaves stuck to his quills as camouflage, strutted past Juka and retrieved his hatchet. In the other paw, he carried a shield of toughened beech bark studded with shells. Staring fiercely at the squirrels, he puffed himself out, cheeks, stomach, and chest.
"Bushy-tailed mice, eh? Well, listen, bullies. I wouldn't stand to see an og treated in that way, tortured and poisoned, nor a rabbit, neither."
Fleet Scut tapped his quills politely.
Excuse me, old lad, but I'm a hare, and they were..."
Rounding on him, the big hedgehog roared,
"Who asked you, eh? Don't dare interrupt when Baron Drucko Spike-Diggle has the floor, or you'll get yourself chopped up into frog meat, you will."
Fleet Scut pawed away the hatchet hovering under his nose.
"Beg pardon, but don't waggle that thing at me. I'm still feeling a bit frail, don't you know? I was merely explain..."
Baron Drucko went into a fury then, raising his hatchet and shouting in a voice which caused the leaves sticking round his mouth to blow away.
"Belay that gab, rabbit! I won't stand it from my ogs, and I won't take it from you. If I whack your head off, that'll cure you of talking. What do you think, rabble?"
The other hedgehogs began banging their hatchets against their shields, each vying to shout louder than the rest.
"Ho, ho! That's the stuff, Baron! Chop that rabbit's head off! That'd stop his chatter, Baron! Does your honor want us to chop these bush mice up, too?"
A small, wiry, female hogwife pushed her way through. Grabbing the Baron's hatchet from his paw, she brandished it expertly, clipping the tip off one of his head spikes. Her voice was almost a shriek, high and shrill.
"You're blathering big pincushion! Pin your ears back and listen to what the rabbit's trying to tell you!"
The Baron deflated totally. Picking up the tip of his head spike, he chewed on it like a toothpick.
"Merkle wart, you're showing me up in front of me own rabble."
He ducked as she swung the hatchet again.
"Show you up? Every time you open that great trap of yourn, you show yourself up, breeze barrel?"
Then, turning quickly aside, she whispered to Fleet Scut,
"You have your say now. Shout out loud, mine. That's all this rabble pays heed to. Beasts what can shout, even rabbits."
Fleet Scut yelled at the top of his voice, and to his surprise, the hedgehog rabble went silent and listened.
"I'm a hare, do you hear? A bally hare! These squirrels are my friends. They weren't harming me. Just helping me through a serious illness, that's all. No need to go chopping any beast up round here, chaps. What? What? What?"
Determined to shout louder than Fleet Scut, the Baron hollered at a volume that hurt the hare's ears.
"Well, why didn't you say so at first, instead of causing all this trouble and strife, eh?"
The Baron's wife, Merklewort, swung the hatchet once more, clipping off another of his head spikes.
"Because you never gave him a whiffling chance to, Aunt Brain!"
Sulkily, the Baron picked up the head spike tip and stuck it in his mouth next to the first one. Merklewort pulled them out and stamped on them.
"Will you stop that, Drucko?
You'll have eaten yourself up one day, carrying on like that. Ask these creatures if they'd like some black currant and plum crumble. Go on, snit nose.
Baron Drucko's offer was readily accepted by Fleetscut and the squirrels. While the latter trooped after Drucko to the hog den, the old hare, well aware of where the ruling power in the tribe lay, made a wobbly, though elegant leg to Merklewort, offering his paw.
"Allow me to escort you, marm. A pretty hog wife should never jolly well walk alone, what?"
She accepted.
"Well, well, ain't this grand? That husband of mine wouldn't give you a push off a rock."
Baron Drucko's tribe were known as the Rabble. They lived in rabble conditions, even though their camp was naught but a temporary one. However, neither Juka nor Fleetscut could pretend that rabble black currant and plum crumble was anything other than first class. The guests seated themselves on a rotten elm trunk and dug into sizable bowls of the stuff, steaming hot and covered in sweet maple sauce.
"You'll have to forgive us," Merklewort remarked casually. "The camp's a bit untidy. Of course, it ain't what we're used to, is it, Drucko?"
The Baron licked white sauce from his snout and sniffed.
"I should whifflin' well hope not. Still, what's a little untidiness atwixt friends, eh? That's what I allus say."
Juka shifted to accommodate a beetle grubbing its way out of the rotten log they were seated on.
"A little untidiness, indeed," she murmured low to Fleetscut. "Methinks the place looks like a battlefield in the midst of a midden."
The area was littered with chopped-off head spikes, broken bowls, fruit and vegetable skins, and other debris, far too dreadful to mention. Fleetscut coughed politely and made conversation, lest any beast had heard Juka's remarks.
"Ahem! I take it that you don't live hereabouts, then, marm?"
Merklewort wiped spilled crumble from her lap with a withered dock leaf, which she then devoured.
"Oh, graciousness, no! We're only up here looking for our babe, little Skittles. The whifflin' wanderin' woggle spike, or, I mean the darlin' hinfant og, went and got hisself losted. We've seen neither nose nor spike of him for a frog's age. Oh, I do hope he ain't been consoled by vermins."
Baron Drucko looked up in the midst of stealing a dozing compatriot's bowl of crumble.
"Don't you mean consorted?"
Fleetscut chipped in, making sure his tone was loud enough.
"I think the word you're looking for is consumed, chaps. Actually, we met up with two hedgehog types, Grassum and Reedum, they called themselves, a couple of days back. They found your babe and adopted him, but the little tyke escaped from them and wandered off again, what? We're keeping a weather eye out for your Skittles, though. Some good beast should find him sooner or later. Don't you jolly well fret, folks."
Baron Drucko succeeded in filching the bowl of crumble from his rabble mate, placing his empty bowl in the hedgehog's paws and digging into the fresh one.
"Aye, long as he don't get consecuted by vermins, whifflin' little nuisance. Well, did I tell you one of the reasons I wanted to come up this way was to enter the contest? Ha! I expect that's why you're wandering this neck of country too, eh?"
The old hare put aside his bowl. It was grabbed by a rabble hog who began licking the inside of it thoroughly.
"Contest? What contest, Baron? First I've heard of it."
Baron Drucko cuffed the sleeping hedgehog alongside him into wakefulness.
"What? Hey, what's the matter?"
The rabble hog spluttered.
"Boy, some beast added me puddin'."
The Baron cuffed him another few buffets.
"It's attin', not added, swill brain. Never mind that. Give me that contest thing you found."
The hedgehog searched his spikes, ruminating aloud.
"Where'd I puddin' it? Sorry, putted it. Aha! Here it is."
An extremely grimy birch bark strip was thrust into the hare's paw. He opened it gingerly, wiping off remnants of bygone meals and a few unidentified smears. Fleetscut read aloud.
"Come, mother, father, daughter, son, my challenge stands to any beast. I'll take on all or just the one, whether at the fight or feast. Aye, try to beat me and defeat me. Set 'em up, I'll knock 'em down. Just try to outbrag me, you'll see. King Bucko Big Bones wears the crown.
Juka the Sling raised her eyebrows at the old hare.
Methinks Big Bones has a fine opinion of himself. That's the hare thou art going up against. Well, good luck to thee. Yon fellow must have the might to back up his challenge.
Merklewort poked a grimy paw at Fleetscut.
Ha! So, you're going to take up the challenge, eh?
Don't you think you're a bit long in tooth and seasons?
Fleetscut patted the top of his gray head, and then his chest.
Farm, there may be winter on the mountain, but there's spring at its heart. I must accept a challenge if I'm to raise an army to take Salamandastron, for we need this Bucko Watson and his followers on our side. So, I'll search old Big Chops out and throw down the Bally Gauntlet, what?
Drucko raised his dripping spikes from the pudding bowl.
Why, me too. I'll take a whiffle at it.
But you can't, sir,
Fleetscut objected.
You're a blinkin' Baron of Ogs. How can you be a king of hares, what?
Drucko shrugged and collared another bowlful from a smaller rabble hog.
Huh. Hares or ogs, all the same to me. I knows how to be boss and put me paw down firm. Hard but fair, that's me.
He emphasized the point by draining the tankard belonging to the hedgehog on his left, rubbing his stomach and belching aloud.
Ah, that's betterer. What do you say we join forces and seek this King Bucko out together, eh? We ain't got a clue where to find him. What about you, Cully?
Without consulting Juka, Fleetscut drew out the poem he was carrying.
Right you are, Baron. We'll go together. Safety in numbers, what? Listen to these directions. Discover then a stream wolf's ford, tug thrice upon the royal cord, then my honor guard will bring loyal subjects to their king. Does that make any sense to you, old chap?
Drucko scratched his stubby head spikes reflectively.
Why, it's poetry, ain't it? All those funny words put together like a song, but you speak 'em 'stead of singing. That's the answer. It's poetry.
He sat back, looking quite pleased with himself, until his wiry little wife gave him a shove, which sent him sprawling on his back spikes.
Pay no heed to that nincompoke,
Merklewort snorted.
A stone's got more brains than him. I think I might know where 'tis. Round here they calls all the pikefishes stream wolf. Two of our scouts found a place couple of days back, a shallow crossin' just afore the stream breaks into the river. That's a ford, ain't it?
Juka picked up her short spear.
Canst thou take us there, hogwife?
Ignoring her husband's struggles to get up off his back, Merklewort bawled at the rabble hogs.
Belay! Break camp, hogs! Barleybur, Shunko, take us to that place you scouted out, if and you can unmember where it is. Stir your spikes, or we'll leave you behind, Drucko.
The combined forces cut into a winding path, which took them into what seemed a dim maze of thick, ancient trees. Apart from the odd sunshaft breaking through the foliage, it was silent, still, and clothed in a soft green radiance. Juka and Fleetscut marched together at the rear. The squirrel was highly displeased with the old hare's tactics, and told him so in no uncertain manner.
"'Twould have been fitting had thou asked me about joining my tribe up with these spiked, ill-mannered vagabonds. Rabble they be named, and rabble they are. I like them not. And who gave thee authority to decide whither we go, eh? Thou art no better than them, long ears." Treating us in such fashion, after we came all this way with thee.
Fleetscut's dislike of Juka still persisted. Moreover, he was feeling better now, full of crumble and ready for an argument.
Well, pish tush, me old bush tail. You know what we always say at Salamandastron? If you don't like it, then you can jolly well lump it. So there, come all this way with me, indeed. I never asked you to, marm. You and your squirrels can go sling your hooks, what? Aye, go on back to your safe little pine grove, though it'll probably be swarming with all kinds of bottle-nosed, blue-bottomed vermin by now. Huh, I could say I wish you good luck, but I blinkin' well don't.
The squirrel leader bared her teeth viciously.
I don't need thy good luck wishes, old'un. Ye branded me coward. I'll show ye I'm not, nor my warriors. We're with thee to the last step of this journey, end where it may.
Fleet Scott curled his lip in contempt.
Oh, why, you're with me all the way. For vengeance, no. For honor, huh? What would you know about honor? Juka, the famous sling. Cha! To see what weapons and plunder you can get your paws on, that's why you're with me, lady. And you call these hedgehogs ill-mannered vagabonds? Let me tell you, tree walloper, you're no better than them. Matter of fact, they're more honest about it than you, what?
Glaring and snorting at one another, the two continued without further words. 16. Lord Stonepaw had been watching the passage outside the cavern for sight or sound of foe beasts. Both he and Stiffener were taking turns on sentry, but there had been little to report in the last several hours. The Badger Lord arrived back in the cavern to find his hares grouped around old Bramwell, urging him to recall something.
Come on, old chap. You say it's called Little Bob Hare, eh? Now think carefully. How did it go?
Bramwell was very old and confused. He looked pleadingly at the faces around him.
Hey, what? Surely you can recall it yourselves.
This announcement was followed by snorts of impatience.
'Twas before our time. Nurse Willoway was long gone then.
Stonepaw joined them. Placing a paw around Bramwell's skinny old shoulders, he silenced the rest.
Calm down now, friends. What's going on here?
Bramwell thinks he knows a way out, sir. But the old buffer's gone and forgotten the bally thing.
Stonepaw raised his eyebrows reprovingly at the speaker.
A hare can forget lots of things when he reaches the winter seasons. You should know that. Look at us. We're no bunch of spring chicks anymore. I'm older than you all. Don't pick on Bramwell. He can't help it, can you, old lad?
Bramwell pounded a feeble paw against his gray head.
'Tis in there, sire. The old skip-rope rhyme that Nurse Willoway used to teach young leverets. But alas, it was so long ago I can't remember it. Though I'm sure it was called Little Bob Hare or something like that.
Stonepaw scratched his stripes pensively.
I was here in Nurse Willoway's time. She was a stern creature. I'll never forget those herbal tonics and physics Willoway brewed up for the young'uns. What a smell. Glad I never had to take them.
Wait. Little Bob Hare? I recall that.
'Twas the one little hare maids used to chant when I swung the rope for them to skip. I'll tell you what, old friend. You and I will sit down someplace quiet together with a bite of cheese and some ale. We'll work it out together, and Blench can write it down as we remember it. Right. Stiffener, your turn for sentry go. Blench, get some charcoal from the fire and a flat piece of stone. The rest of you, take a nap and stay clear of Bramwell and me.
Torley put his ear to the barred oak door of the cell where he and the other captives had been locked. He listened carefully, trying to distinguish the voices he could hear coming from somewhere beyond, but he was distracted by a fat, hungry old hare behind him called Woebee, bewailing the fact that she was short of food, as some or most hares will. Torley tried ignoring her. An impossible feat.
Bit of a frost that was, Sailors, old gal. If you and Torleap hadn't cheeked the Trun Beast, we might have had a morsel between us to keep fur and ears together. My word, I can't ever recall starving like this. I'm getting pains in me tummy. What time is it? Just past noon, what? I'd normally be sitting down to me post-luncheon snack now. Rose petal and maple wafers, scones with strawberry preserve and meadow cream, with a nice pot of mint and comfrey tea. Now we haven't got a crust or a confounded swig of water twixt the lot of us. How long will we have to put up with this state of affairs? Starvin's no fun.
Torleap let the crystal monocle drop from his eye. His temper was fraying dangerously, listening to Woebee's endless monologue. She seemed to go on and on and on. Normally polite, he rounded on her brusquely.
I say, marm, do you mind giving the old jaws a blinkin' rest, what? Confound it all, we could be a lot worse off.
Wobe sniffed indignantly.
"Indeed, sir? A lot worse off, you say? Pray, how?"
Torley pointed stiffly down with his paw.
"Well, for a start, we could have been locked up in the cellars in the flippin' dark. Granted, we've got no food, but at least we can see daylight."
He gestured to the round hole which formed a window. Sailors nodded her agreement.
"Lovely view of the sea from up here, what? Suppose Trun thought that if they'd locked us up in the cellars, Lord Stonepaw and the others may have broken us out."
Wobe poked her head out of the window hole. The cell was really high up on the mountain. Down below, the beach looked like a mere yellow ribbon, beyond which the great sea stretched until it was lost in a blue haze.
"Maybe we'd have been better off down below. There's absolutely no escape from this high-up place. I say, Torleap, I can hear those voices you mentioned clearer from here."
Hurrying to the window, Torleap confirmed her observation.
"Stap me, you're right, marm. Now I beg you, please be silent while I eavesdrop. May hear something jolly important."
Two of Ungat Trun's horde captains were holding a conversation in the chamber below the cell. Well out of Ungat Trun's hearing, Rogue the Weasel and Meyerfleck the Rat were discussing the horde's position.
"Our soldiers'll take a lot of feedin', Rogue, mark my words.
The Great One ain't no fool, he knows that. Tomorrow the fleet's putting out to sea for fishing. There's a couple of patrols going to forage the cliffs and dunes for birds' eggs.
Wasting their time. No birds or eggs out there. We killed off the seabirds out at sea before we got here, and the rest flew off. I still don't see where all the victuals will come from."
"Oh, they'll find something sooner or later, I suppose. Bet we get sent with our troops on an inland forage. Meanwhile, it ain't too bad for the likes of us. We get to live off in the striped dog's larders for a while. Good victuals, eh?"
"Aye, that they are. Come on, we'd better get downstairs. The Mighty One's still carrying on about the striped dog and his followers hiding in the cellar caves. I'd hate to be them when they're captured. You know what Trun's like. They'll die long and slow. I heard the Mighty One's starving this lot up above so that sooner or later one of them will break and tell where the striped dog's hid himself. I've heard that, too. But suppose they don't tell, and he finds the striped dog and those others. What do you think he'll do with this lot in the cell above?" "Oh, they won't be no use any more. Long and slow, that'll be their fate. Long and slow."
In the cell above, every hare had heard the conversation. When the captains had gone, there was a deadly silence among the prisoners. Wobe could not prevent a sob escaping her lips. Torley patted her ears.
"Don't fret, marm. They won't catch Lord Stonepaw. He's a lot cleverer than those rotten vermin give him credit for."
Sailors stared out of the high window longingly.
"I just wish there was something we could jolly well do to escape this place. Nothing worse than sitting round just waiting, what?"
Captains Meyerfleck and Rogue were passing the Wildcat's chamber when the door opened, and Ungat Trun emerged with Frigoril at his heels. Both captains halted and saluted smartly. Their leader nodded.
"Ah, I was just about to send for you. Listen now, I want you to take your troops, all your troops, down to the bottom caves. Flood those caves and passages with horde beasts. Show those other idiots down there how to snare an old strike dog and a few hares. I want them taken, at any cost. Don't fail me."
Meyerfleck and Rogue saluted stiffly and marched off, shouting orders to their column leaders. Ungat Trun addressed the silent Frigoril.
"I've got a small task for you, too. Take whom you like, and find me some new spiders. There must be lots in this cave-riddled mountain and the rocks outside. Bring them to me in the Stripe Dog's chamber. They can build webs there and redecorate it for me. Treat them carefully when you find them."
"I live only to serve your word, Mightiness."
The Grand Frigoril glided soundlessly off. Old Bramwell was blinking drowsily by the time they had pieced together the skipping rhyme. Stonepaw was tired, too. He stifled a yawn.
"Well, I hope we haven't forgotten anything.
Read it out loud, Blench." The cook read aloud from her neat lines of script,
soon picking up the skip rope chant which little hares had called out long ago as they held their smocks and skipped.
Down in the cellars where no beast goes, little Bob Hare went running. He ran and ran and followed his nose where rocks never let the sun in. He got very tired and sat by a pool, then found out to his cost, sir, that he was naught but a silly fool who'd gotten himself lost there. "Oh, woe is me!" cried little Bob. "'Tis dark and so unsightly. I must find some way out of here, to where the sun shines brightly." So he climbed up to the coiling snake, all damp and slippy feeling, and found beyond the big plum cake a hole right through the ceiling. He went up through and chased the blue and made it home for tea, sir. He beat the tide and spinies, too, but his mama tanned his tail fur.
In the silence which followed, Stonepaw turned to his hares.
Well, let's see if we can make it home for tea, friends, or out of here at least.
Troby scratched between his ears.
Beg pardon, sir, but are you sure you got it right?
As far as I can recall, we did. Right, Bramwell?
The ancient hare did not reply to the badger lord. He had drifted off to sleep. Blanche gave her opinion.
It looks fine to me, sire. Most of it's just a leveret story about a little feller getting hisself lost down here. 'Tis the last 8 lines is what we want from that bit about the coiling snake, right?
Troby was still a bit bewildered by it all.
Where in the name of salad do we find a climbing snake, what?
A hare called Willip corrected him.
Not a climbing snake, 'twas a coiling snake. It says little Bob climbed up to it, up there.
She pointed up at the cave ceiling. Like stargazers, the badger and his hares wandered about the cavern, heads thrown back, staring at the stalactite formations.
Oops, got a drop of water in me eye. Watch where you're going, old chap. Go and bump into some other beast. You've near knocked me over twice now, what?
Stop right where you are, Troby, or you'll walk straight into that pool.
Oh, I say, ha-ha, one of those thingies hanging down looks just like old Perlo with a great long nose, ha-ha-ha.
Well, at least I've got a decent nose, not like that apple pip stuck on the end of your muzzle, cha.
Aha, there 'tis, I see it. There 'tis!
Splash!
The badger lord's huge paws scooped a dripping Troby up from the pool.
Where? Point it out, quickly!
Dancing to and fro, shaking freezing water from his fur, Troby tried to recite the coiling snake.
Where was I? Oh, confound it! I've lost the bloomin' thing now! Deary me! There's only one thing for it! Get ready to fish me out again, sir! Here goes!
Troby flung himself in the air, and an instant before he hit the pool, his paw shot out.
There!
Stonepaw marked the spot in a flash. Unable to stop himself laughing, he hauled Troby out of the water again.
Ho, ho, ho! Good old Troby. Not only impressions of a bird and a fish, but you did find it over there in the far corner. Don't check it again, though. That pool looks to me as if it might go down forever, and I might not manage to catch you next time.
Bramwell doddered forward, rubbing sleep from his eyes.
Not like you to be taking a bath before summer, Troby. What's going on here, sir?
Above the rock ledges in the cavern's dark-shadowed corner, the stalactite hung, formed by water dripping for countless ages and leaving minuscule limestone deposits which added gradually to its length. At some point in time, the water took a different course, threading its way around the main column and forming into a type of embossed spiral winding about the stalactite, an unmistakable representation of a coiling snake. Stiffener, being the most agile, was brought in from sentry duty and replaced by Perlo. The boxing hare weighed up the route, shaking his head doubtfully.
Those ledges look much too slippery for our hares to climb, sir. Did we bring any rope with us?
Stonepaw looked crestfallen.
We haven't any rope at all.
Then use bowstrings and belts, you puddins!
Old Bramwell waved an apologetic paw.
Didn't mean to call you a puddin', sir.
Beg your pardon?
The Badger Lord chuckled.
You can call me what you like, as long as you come up with ideas like that, my old friend. Belts and bowstrings, eh?
Right.
Cord girdles, woven belts, and tough bowstrings were soon lashed together into an awkward but serviceable rope. Stiffener coiled it about his shoulders, spat on his paws, and clambered onto the first ledge. It was worn smooth, wet, and slick with trickling water. Willip scraped up a bit of damp sand from the stones at the pool edge, molded it into a ball, and tossed it up to Stiffener.
Here, catch! Rub this on your paws. 'Twill help!
The grit did the trick. Up Stiffener went, clinging like a fly to the slippery rock ledges, with his friends below calling out advice to him.
Pin yourself flat against the wall and reach up for that bit sticking out above. Move your paws left a touch, Stiff. Bit more. That's it. Now lie flat on your tummy and wriggle along. See that crevice? Wedge into it and climb up there.
Gradually, bit by painstaking bit, the boxing hare made his way upward until he reached the stalactite they were certain was the coiling snake. Leaning out from the ledge, he took hold of it, inspecting the dark ceiling above. Bramwell called up to him.
Do you see the big plum cake? That's what the rhyme says you want to look for. Any sign?
Stiffener arched his neck back, searching.
Sire, can you move one of those big lanterns this way?
Stonepaw shifted a lantern directly beneath the hare.
So, there you are, me beauty. I found it, mates.
Stiffener called.
Be back down in a tick. Stand clear now.
The makeshift rope unraveled, its end hitting the floor. Stiffener came down it paw over paw in a manner that would have done credit to any squirrel. He landed lightly.
Up there, just right of that coiling snake thing, is the fat, wide end of a stalactite which must have snapped off. Looks just like a big old plum cake, though not as good as the ones you bake, Blanche Marm. The other side of it is a hole. Goes straight through the ceiling, sir. Anyhow, I swung across there and tied the rope round a little nub of rock inside the hole so we can all climb up there. I reckon the whole space might be wide enough to take a beast your size, sir.
Lord Stonepaw hugged Stiffener fondly.
Splendid work, Stiffener. You're a real corker.
Bramwell was the first to go, with Stiffener right behind him, lest the old fellow got into difficulties. Surprisingly, he did quite well, though at one or two points Stiffener had to get his head and shoulders beneath Bramwell and push. Heaving the ancient hare through the hole, Stiffener started back down again. Stonepaw noticed the boxing hare was beginning to breathe heavily.
You won't last out, clambering up and down that rope all the time. We'll have to think of an easier way.
Stiffener squatted until his breathing eased.
You're right, sir. I ain't getting any younger. I got an idea, though. Let's get two of our strongest up there with me. Say, Perlo and Troby. The three of us can stay up in the hole, run a fixed noose into the rope, and hoist the rest up one by one.
What do you think, sir?
Stonepaw agreed readily.
An excellent idea. Troby, up you go, friend. Perlo? Perlo?
A worried frown flashed across the badger's face, and he hurried to the concealed entrance, picking up a torch as he went. There was no sign of Perlo standing sentry in the narrow rift. Stonepaw heard yelling and clattering from outside. Forcing his great bulk through the crack, the Badger Lord pushed out into the passage and followed the sounds. Around the first bend, Perlo was being set upon by six or more vermin. He fell with two on top of him, the rest scrabbling to get at him. Stonepaw came hurtling into the fray, laying about him with a blazing torch.
You Lelia!
Ripping the two horde beasts off Perlo, the Badger Lord dispatched both by smashing them head-on against the rock walls of the passage. Taking to their heels, the others fled, running wildly for their lives. Stonepaw pulled Perlo upright and retrieved his torch.
Are you badly hurt, my friend?
Though blood ran from Perlo's jaw and back, he shook his head.
I'll be all right, sir, but they've found our cave. 'Twas my mistake to step out into the passage holding a torch. I heard sounds, you see, and walked right into the vermin like a fool.
The badger threw a paw about Perlo to steady him.
Come on. We'll soon have you up through the hole and out.
But even as he found the cavern entrance, Stonepaw could hear the din of many vermin charging along the underground tunnels toward the secret cave that was no longer a secret. 17. Surrounded by a virtual flotilla of shrew logboats, which were a bit more sophisticated than Ruff's simple tree trunk, having been hollowed out and cross-benched, Dottie and Girth sat forward on their elm log, digging their paddles deep and calling out the pace in true Gwasom fashion, along with Log-a-Log Gren's shrews. Dottie liked the shrews, aware of a real sense of comradeship in their company. The vessels sped downstream together, with a big shrew called Cubba calling the stroke in his fine bass voice. Taking his orders from Gren, he bellowed out,
"Ahoy, Gwasom! We ain't stopping till we join the river, so let's get our guests there good and fast. The stream's a-running well, and we'll camp near the river fork, so bend your backs and let's show our friends how Gwasom shrews do it. Right, take your stroke from me. 1, 2, wail-a-hey-coom!"
Every beast bent to the paddles, roaring back at Cubba, "Shrum! Shrum!" Cubba called a stroke on every third beat.
"Wail-a-hey-coom!"
Dottie and her friends joined the Gwasom's answer, "Shrum! Shrum!"
"Oh, the river is deep and swift and wide. Wail-a-hey-coom!"
"And there's my matey at my side.
Shrum! Shrum!"
"With the sunlight beaming through the trees.
Wail-a-hey-coom!"
"We'll all remember days like these.
Shrum! Shrum!" "Oh, oh, wail-a-hey-coom! Shrum, shrum, shrew! I won't forget a friend like you."
Brocktree and Ruff cheered when the Gwasom quickened the pace. Showing off their prowess, experienced shrews twirled their paddles high on alternate strokes, clicking the blades against those of their neighbors and dipping back without breaking pace. Ruff was full of admiration for their skill.
"Ha-har! What a fine old bunch of water beasts this gang are!"
Before long, Girth and Dottie had learned the trick.
"Hur-hur, Miss Dot, us'ns be Girt Paggle-wallopers, bri."
Then the entire thing developed into a race. The logboats fairly flew downstream, spray shooting up from their bows. The four friends were caught up in the exhilaration of it all, keeping up with the breakneck stroke, yelling out friendly jibes and exchanging banter with the Gwasom.
"Ah! There's woodworm in that log paddling faster than you lot! Oh, is there now, Cheeky Chops? You'll soon be eating our spray from behind, matey!"
"Grr! Don't ye strain yourselves, zers! Just ye stop in us'n's wake, now!"
"Wake, is it? We thought ye were asleep! Ho, ho, ho! Scallywag, I'll bend my paddle over your head for that! Tut, tut, me old messmate! You'll have to catch us first!
Give him vinegar, Cubba. Show him the old double stroke."
"Come on, sir. Wield that paddle as if it were your sword, what?"
Cubba's booming shout rang out over the sun-flecked waters.
"Chip your paddles. Stop that fuss. Let the stream work carrying us."
Every beast stowed paddles, allowing the boats to skim elegantly along on the silent current. Brocktree leaned back, breathing heavily.
"Whew! We must have covered a day's distance in half a morn there. What do you say, Ruff?"
"Aye. We made the fishes look as if they was standing still."
Dottie flopped down upon the prow, wiping spray from her ears.
"By the left, and by jingo, I'm kerfoozled. What about you?"
Girth's smile split his dark-furred features almost in half.
"Us flew like birds, miss. It were wonderful."
The remainder of that memorable day on the stream passed in similar fashion, sometimes racing, other times cruising, with banter, shanties, and good comradeship prevailing over all. In the late afternoon, Gren passed on orders to make landfall at a recognized Gwasom camping spot, a shallow, sunlit cove. They waded in the clear water, stretching and getting the feel of paws on solid ground again. A few of the younger shrews went deeper for a swim. Girth watched the cooks setting up their fire and digging out supplies in cauldrons.
the kindly mole gave their rations a quick look over before having a word with Dottie.
"Gurth says you lot can have the evening off,"
the hair maid announced to the delighted shrew cooks.
"He'll be chef today. You chaps are in for a real treat. My mole pal's going to make Gurth Tunnel stew, followed by preserved apple and plum pudding with sweet chestnut sauce. How does that sound, Watt?"
The cooks patted Gurth's back and hugged him thankfully. Then, in the true manner of shrews, they hung about, observing him at work, offering advice and criticism, and arguing among themselves.
"You need to peel those turnips thinner. Don't waste any. Pay no heed to that in Gurth. You peel them how you like. But I'd roll me pastry wider if I was you." "Rubbish. The mole's rolled it too wide as it is. Can't you see? That cauldron'll boil over, and if you don't watch it, shows how much you know, Sniggletail. A watch cauldron never boils. That's what my mom always said. You're doing that dried fruit all wrong, Gurth. Here, let me show you how 'tis done."
Dottie had a quick word with Lord Brocktree, who soon settled the argument. Drawing his great battle blade, he sliced a dead limb from an old willow with one mighty stroke.
"Some wood for your fire, Gurth.
Oh, while I've got my sword out, do you want me to stop any shrews from interfering with your cooking? I could whack off a few tails, eh?" By the time Gurth turned to answer, the shrews had fled.
"Thank ye, Zer Brock. Them serpently muddlin' argifyin' lickle haminoles. Oh, I never seed aught like 'em."
Logalog Gran approached Dottie, Ruff, and Brocktree and pointed downstream.
"I was going to take a stroll along the bank. We have to cross a ford before we reach the river tomorrow. Just thought I'd best check to see if the ford level is high enough to sail over. If not, we'll have to carry the boats along the bankside. Would you like to take a walk with me, friends?"
Brocktree sheathed the sword upon his broad back.
"Be with you in a moment, Marm. I want to check on Skittles.
Do you know I've not seen hide nor hair of that rascal since morn?"
Ruff pointed out a group of young shrews frolicking in the stream, Skittles splashing and giggling with them.
"There's the rogue. He's been with that gang all day, traveling up front in the lead boat with Gren."
The shrew chieftain turned her eyes to the sky.
"I always make the young'un sit in my boat, so I can keep an eye on him. But seasons of vinegar! I've never had to cope with one like that Skittles. He's more trouble than a barrel of beetles."
The Badger Lord smiled and shook his head.
"Aye, he is that. As soon as I mentioned getting a wash this morning, he vanished like smoke. Look at him now, playing in the stream like a little fish. I couldn't get him near water for the life of me. Come on, let's get going before he notices us."
They paddled silently off down the bank. Before they had got around the bend, however, the hog babe sprang out of the water in front of them, a wicked grin on his face. He scrambled up onto the badger's back, seating himself on the sword hilt before any beast could stop him.
"Hee-hee-hee! Think you was going off without Skickles, eh?"
Brocktree turned his head, growling in the hog babe's face.
"Be off with you, pestilence!"
Skittles tweaked the badger's nose impudently.
"See? I nice and clean now, Bach. I come with you, mate."
Lord Brocktree turned his face to the front, smiling hugely, though his voice was gruff and stern.
"Huh. I suppose you'll have to, seeing as you're up there, but sit still, and no nonsense out of you, sir."
Skittles saluted.
"And no nonsense out of you, sir, or I chop your tail off with your sword. Chop!"
It was a pleasant walk in the warm evening. Dragonflies hovered over the stream, hunting for midges and mayflies. Pepper saxifrage and yellow-cupped silverweed grew in profusion close to the stiller edges. Noon had turned to early evening gold, with pink and cream cloud banks massed prettily to the south. Logalog Gren halted them inside of the ford.
"You can glimpse the river not far from here, friends. Stay well on the banks now. If the water's deep enough, on the ford, our boats should pass over it with no trouble. I'll have to test it with a stick, so keep well on land. The waters hereabouts have stream wolves aplenty hunting in 'em, and they hide themselves well, so 'tis best to take care."
On reaching the ford, Gren demonstrated what she meant by tossing a few crusts she had brought along into the water. Four long pike shot out of the reed cover and fought each other viciously for the food.
"Wow!
Where they come from, Bark?
Brocktree glanced back at the startled hog babe on his shoulder. Stream wolves lie in wait for food, then they pounce, just like the one Ruff saved you from in the water meadows. While the pike were busy, Gren poked a stick into the ford.
"'Tis deep enough. Our craft should pass over safely.
I wouldn't trail my paws in there if I was you, Skittles. Look, further down the bank, you can see the river where it meets the stream."
Dottie skipped down the bank a piece.
"'I say, chaps, cranberries! Scads of 'em growing down here!'
Dainty pink flowers with curling petals stood swaying on wispy, thin-leaf stalks. Beneath them, the small, orange-hued berries grew in profusion. They were sweet, but sharp to the taste. The friends gathered in the welcome addition to their supplies, sampling the fruit as they picked.
"'Mmm, nice and tasty, Marm! I wager Girth and your cooks could make a batch or two of cranberry tarts with these!'
Dottie chided the juice-stained hog babe.
"'Steady on, Skittles! You'll make yourself ill if you scoff too many. Don't be greedy now!'
Lord Brocktree raised an eyebrow at Ruff. "'That's the best one I've heard for a while. A hare telling another creature not to eat too much. Wonders never cease.' Dottie overheard the remark and turned primly on the badger.
"'Manners don't cost anything, you know. My mater always said enough was as good as a feast, sir. Merely advising the little tyke. Skittles, come back here, you rip!'
But the hog babe was off on an adventure of his own. He dashed away into the surrounding bushes, chortling.
"'Yah, yah, you can't catch Skickles!'
They raced after him, fearing that he would turn and run into the ford. For a hog babe, Skittles was surprisingly nippy. He put on a good turn of speed, dodging through shrubbery and around tree trunks. Gren and Ruff went one way, Dottie and Brocktree the other, hoping to head him off. Then they heard Skittles' shrill screams cut the evening air.
"'Eek! Let go of me! Let go of Skickles!'
Dottie was brushed to one side as Brocktree grabbed a battle blade from his back and crashed off through the foliage like a juggernaut.
Pang!
A slingstone ricocheted from the sword blade. Juka the Sling stood barring Brocktree's path, whirling her loaded weapon, teeth bared, ready to do battle.
"'Hold hard, Stripe Dog, or the next one puts thine eye out!' "'Oh, corks! You benighted bush-tailed buffoon, pack in slingin'! Can't you see that's a badger, Lord?"
Fleetscut stuck out his paw just in time. Juka's sling wrapped around it, the stone load clacking sharply as it whacked the old hare's paw. He hopped and leaped about in pain, yanking Juka crazily around with him.
"'Ow! Ow! Ouch! You blithering, blister-nosed bang-tail! You've gone and busted me poor old paw! Ow!'
Every beast seemed to arrive on the scene together then. Baron Drucko, Merklewort, a rabble of hogs, and the squirrel tribe. Gren came dashing up with Dottie and Ruff hard on her heels. Brocktree leaned on his sword hilt, perplexed.
"'What in the name of all seasons is this?'
Skittles appeared from beneath a bush and sat down nonchalantly on Brocktree's big footpaw, shaking his head.
"'Name of seasons! War all dis, eh?'
More pandemonium ensued.
"'My little babe, me treasure! Where in the name of carnation have you been, you foul-needled maggot?'
"'Ahoy there, Marm, curb your tongue. The little bloke's been with us.'
Ruff tried vainly to placate the angry hog mother, but only succeeded in offending her mate.
"'Shut your trap, babe robber. If my wife axes where in the coronation he's been, then let him tell her.'
"'Excuse me a tick, folks. But what's all this about, carnations and coronations? Shouldn't the word be tarnation, what?"
Dottie interjected.
"'Beg pardon, Marm, but shouldn't you keep your long ears out of other beasts' business? Bad form, Marm!'
Fleetscott said severely.
"'Who are you jolly well calling long ears? You're a hare yourself, you doddering old paw-wobbler! A fig for you, sir!
Thou art a bit young in seasons to be cheeking thy elders in such manner, miss. Mind, or I'll teach thee a lesson!'
"'I say, you broom-tailed paw-breaker, do you mind belting up? This is my quarrel, what?'
Clang! Silence!
Silence, I say!
The ring of Brocktree's sword blade upon a rock, coupled with his stentorian roar, created instant quiet. The badger lord sheathed his weapon.
"Next beast I hear arguing will have me to deal with. Now back to the bank and gather cranberries, all of you. Don't stand there gawping at me. We have the best cooks in all Mossflower back at our camp. If you want hot cranberry tarts for supper tonight, you lot would be better off picking berries than arguing. We'll sort all our differences out over a decent meal. Now get moving."
Muttered introductions were made as the party bent to pick cranberries. Brocktree and Dottie filled Merklewort and Drucko in on Skittles' encounter with the river wolf, and the trial it had been trying to keep him in order. Titles, histories, and names of friends and relatives were exchanged. Bags, aprons, helmets, and pouches were filled until the area was stripped relatively clean of the good fruit. They trudged back along the bank in the failing light, Baron Drucko shaking his head in despair of his offspring as he explained to a smiling Brocktree,
"Four times. Four, mind. That little tail snip has gone missing four times since he was born, and him not more'n two seasons old. No wonder me spikes is going gray. Those the missus ain't chopped off wid me hatchet."
Dottie and Fleetscut had apologized to one another and were getting on quite amicably.
"Well, stop me! So you're old Blench the cook's niece, what? Bet you can't cook as well as your jolly old aunt, eh, Miguel? Beg pardon? Me cook? I'd burn a salad, sir. Us of the fatal beauty type are pretty awful cooks, if you ask me."
Gert's apple and plum pudding with sweet chestnut sauce was set to one side as the Gwasom cooks set about making cranberry tarts, which involved arguing.
"These will go nice with the sweet chestnut sauce, mate. Who taught you to cook bottle snout? Rose hip and honey syrup, that's the proper thing to have with them. Rubbish! You don't need any sauce or syrup with cranberry tarts. A few crystallized cuckoo flower petals, that's all any beast in their right mind would sprinkle them with. Huh! Too late now. They're scoffing them anyway."
Stories were told around the stone oven campfire as it reflected to the night stream, and new-made friends relaxed on the bank. Brocktree and Fleetscut sat together. The Badger Lord was extremely disturbed about the bad news from Salamandastron.
"My father Stonepaw did right in sending you to gather an army, Fleetscut. For one of your long seasons, you have done well, despite the difficulties you were under. Relax now, old fellow. I take charge as from here on in." The old hare bowed respectfully to the son, as he had always done to the father.
"Do you have a plan, Lord?"
Brocktree's dark eyes glowed in the firelight.
"Oh yes, Fleetscut, I have a plan. Trust your badger lord."
"I always have, sire, without question. Do you mind me saying? You remind me of your dad when I was naught but a leveret, though a bit bigger and fiercer, if that's at all possible."
Brocktree's great striped muzzle nodded.
"It's possible, my friend. 'Tis said to wield a battle blade the size of mine, a badger must suffer from the blood wrath."
Fleetscut fell silent then. He had heard tales of badgers, the most reckless and savage of warriors, all affected by the violent scourge known as the blood wrath. Nothing could stop such a beast in combat, not weapons nor force of fangs and claws. This new lord was a truly perilous beast. That night, Lord Brocktree and the tribe leaders, Juka the Sling, Baron Drucko, Logalog Gren, Girth, son of Long Ladle, and Ruffgar Brookback, the otter, made a pact. Between them, they would gather a great army and take Salamandastron, free it from the claws of Unget Trun. Lord Brocktree's stern voice caused neck hairs to bristle. "The lands our creatures live on must not be tainted by vermin hordes. Babes should be safe to wander alone. This will not be accomplished by one tribe alone. I need you all, any beast that loves freedom, hedgehogs, shrews, squirrels, moles, otters, mice, voles, and especially hares. We will go with you to the realm of this self-proclaimed hare king. He must be challenged and defeated. Then he and his followers must be persuaded to join us. They will all be fine fighting hares." Girth stared up at the badger's massive form.
"Well, if in any beast be's girt enough to beat her king, that'll be easier."
Rocktree was looking straight at Dotty as he replied. No, Girth. 'Tis only fair that a hare challenges a hare. Tell me, Fleetscut, what is the next clue to this king's whereabouts? Is there anything special we must search for? The old hare repeated the lines he had committed to memory. Discover then a streamwolf's ford, tug thrice upon the royal cord, then my honor guard will bring loyal subjects to their king. Brocktree tossed a few logs into the oven fire. We've already found the streamwolf's ford. Let's get some sleep now. Tomorrow we've got a royal appointment. What do you say, Ruff?
Har! Royal me rudder! If in that'n's a king, I'm a emperor of otters, mates.
Dotty lay awake for a while, wondering why the badger had stared at her so pointedly when he referred to a hare's only being challenged by another hare. But she did not dwell on it over long. Just before sleep claimed Juka, she heard the young hare maid mutter aloud to herself,
Ahem. All those of my subjects still awake, take note of this proclamation. Queen Dorothea Duckfontaine Dilworthy is about to take her fatal beauty sleep, so put a clap on your jolly old traps, what?
The shrew Cubba wandered back into camp as the cooking fires were being rekindled next morning. He saluted Logalog Gren with a flourish of his rapier.
Got up an hour afore dawn, marm, scoured the bank by the ford and found what you're looking for.
Jolly decent of you, old beast.
Fleetscut called back from his place on the breakfast line.
You mean you found the royal what's-a-ma-call-it? Where was it?
Cubba sheathed his rapier.
Tain't much, mate. Just a big, thick red cord hanging from a whopping great orn beam. I'll take you there after breakfast.
Rope me log. I'm starving.
Brocktree stepped out and shook Cubba's paw.
Take my place at the front of the line. Well done, sir.
An hour later, their hunger sated by cheese and oatmeal cakes, the remaining cranberry tarts, and some good guasum cider, every beast adjourned to the ford bank. Cubba pointed at the hornbeam tree, around the lee side of which hung a red-tasseled rope, its length going off up amid the foliage.
That's the one, though I ain't tugged on the rope yet.
Brocktree performed an exaggerated bow to Dotty. Would you pray do the honors, m'lady? The hare maid curtsied prettily and fluttered her eyelids.
Why, thank ye, my lord. Methinks I'll give it a jolly old tug once or thrice, providing the blinkin' tree don't follow me bounce, what?
Dotty took firm hold of the cord and gave it three hefty tugs. The thin boughs in the hornbeam crown shook, dislodging a colony of jackdaws. Flapping angrily into the air, they set a din of harsh cries ringing into the quiet woodlands. Baron Drucko watched the birds settle back onto the tree.
Ha, ha, ha! You'd think he could afford proper bells if he's supposed to be a king like he says he is. What do we do now? Shall I give the rope a few more tugs?
Once again, he was not fast enough to escape Merkelwart's hatchet. She clipped one of his head spikes and pushed him down on his bottom so that he was sitting against the hornbeam base.
You leave that rope alone, nincompoop. We sit and wait. Ain't that right, your badgership?
Brocktree unwound skittles from his sword hilt and sat down alongside Drucko. Right, marm, we wait. Juka and Gren deployed both their tribes to the shrubberry where they concealed themselves. The rest sat and waited. Morning was well on before anything happened. It was Girth who leaned close to Brocktree and announced in a bass whisper,
Oi! Here's some beasts a-coomin' this way, zurr.
The badger lord sat casually, eyes half closed.
I see them too, friend. Every beast sits still now. Stay calm.
The air hissed, and a light javelin buried its tip in the ground not far from Ruff's footpaw. 20 rough-looking mountain hares, some still showing white fur patches from last winter, marched up armed to the teeth. Their leader's voice, like his companion's, had a strong burr of the far northern mountains about it.
Arr, wheel now, laddies. What did we hear?
Why don't you ask me that instead of the laddies?
Brocktree replied, his eyes still half closed. They've only just arrived with you. The leader pulled his javelin point from the soil. His voice had an insolent tone to it.
"Hearken to me, striped dog. Ye're in new position to be saucy with me. My hairs are upright and armed ready. Ye and these beauties of yourn are sitting noon unprepared, ye ken?"
The badger lord uttered a short bark. Gwasom and squirrels emerged from hiding, rapiers and slings in evidence. The mountain hare saw his troop were surrounded. Brocktree rose to his full height, sword in paw. "Oh, I can, all right, hare. I can if you give impudence to Lord Brocktree of Brockhall. You'll find your ears dangling from yonder alarm rope. So keep a civil tongue in your head." The hare was visibly cowed, and his tone became more reasonable.
"My apologies, lord, except have to be careful of strangers about these parts. What is it you were wantin'?"
Juka the sling dropped from a hornbeam bough.
"Thou wilt take us to this one who calleth himself king. Move!"
"Look fit enough, don't they, what?" Fleet Scott remarked to Ruff as they followed the hares on a tortuous path through the woodland. "Touch of training and discipline should bring those laddies up to the mark." At the center of the party, Brocktree had called Dottie to his side. He gave her murmured instructions. "Don't speak until I tell you, when we get to where we're going, miss. Don't get flustered or indignant. Just act calm and look as if you're capable of taking care of yourself." The hare maid felt slightly nervous and started babbling.
"Yes, sir. Take care of myself. Act calm. You can bet your belly stripes I will. Most carefulest, calmest blinkin' hare ever twiddled an ear, sir. That's me, what? And as for getting flustered or indignant, by the left, sir, there's not a beast alive can muster flea or fluster me, and I can be rather indignant when called upon. Why, I recall when Grandpa got stuck in the chimney."
Brocktree's paw cuffed her ear lightly.
"Stop babbling, miss. Listen."
A profusion of voices from afar could be heard on the still woodland air. Loud cheering, drum beats, singing, shouting, and many other unidentified discordant sounds. The hare leader, taking care to keep clear of Brocktree, remarked with jaunty cynicism,
"Ark! Brace yourselves, my babes! You're about to enter the court of King Bucko Big Bones, the roarin' beast hisself!"
Dottie took a deep breath and swallowed hard. 18. Troby had already climbed the rope of belts and bowstrings and was sitting in the entrance of the ceiling hole when Lord Stonepaw hurried into the cavern, supporting Perlow. Stiff and Hermetic ran to help them. Calm as ever, the boxing hare ignored the increasing sounds of Trun's blue horde beasts as they charged toward the hiding place.
"I see old Perlow's taking a few knocks, sir. Sounds like we've got trouble coming to visit, eh? Come on, Perlow, let's get you up the rope."
Stonepaw lifted the wounded hare onto the rope, then turned to the others, waiting their turn to climb.
"I want you all up and through that hole as quick and safe as possible. Stiffener, you'll be last hare up. Stay here until the last one's gone, understood?"
The boxing hare threw a stiff salute.
"Sir, but what about you, sir?"
The badger lord's voice was like thunder.
"Never mind about me. I've given you an order, and I expect it to be obeyed. Blench, you go next. Help Troby and Perlow to haul the others up into the hole. I don't need to tell you that speed is of the essence. Go!"
The din outside was very close now. Stonepaw grabbed a javelin and a chunk of rock and lumbered toward the entrance. Stiffener was at his side, paws clenched.
"I'm coming with you, sir."
The badger lord stiff-pawed him in the chest, knocking him back a pace. Stonepaw's voice had sunk to a growl, and there was danger in his eyes.
"I gave you an order, Stiffener Medic. Are you disobeying me?"
Tears sprang to the boxing hare's eyes.
"You know I've never disobeyed your orders, sir. But there'll be too many vermin for you out there. You'll need help, sir."
Stonepaw ruffled Stiffener's ears fondly, as he had done many times when the old hare was young.
"Not this time, old friend. You must get away to lead our warriors. I must hold the entrance to buy you the time to get them out. It is my duty as their lord. Promise me one thing, though. You will try to free Sail Ears and the others if they are still alive. Promise?"
Stiffener wiped a paw across his eyes and saluted Lord Stonepaw one last time.
"Promise? I swear it on me life, sir.
You give 'em blood and vinegar, sir. Slay some for me, eh, what?
The first blue rat's head poked around the rift which formed the cavern entrance. Stonepaw turned his back on Stiffener and charged, bellowing the war cry of Salamandastron.
Eulalia!
It was as if the long seasons had fallen away from the old badger. Strength coursed through his veins like wildfire. Vermin hurtled about him like dandelion clocks in the wind. Wedging himself in the rift, Stonepaw went at them as they crashed on him in waves, Mirefleck and Rogue screeching in the background, urging their horde beasts on.
Take him alive! Throw ropes around him! Wound him! Don't kill the striped dog! Mighty Ungat Trun wants him alive! 10 seasons rations to the ones who capture the striped dog!
Stonepaw flung the rock and slew Captain Rogue. He hammered, stabbed, and battered at the seething mass with his javelin. Ropes parted like dead grass between the badger's jaws and big blunt claws, and his voice echoed thunderously through the underground passages and caves as he wreaked destruction on his hated foes, regardless of wounds. The blood wrath was upon him.
Eulalia! Come to the Lord of Salamandastron! Eulalia! Blood and vinegar!
Stiffener followed the final hare through the hole. They were gathered in a huddle, bloodless paws gripping weapons tightly, peering down, unable to see anything. Their ears filled with battle sounds from below. Seizing a torch, the boxing hare gestured forward into the tunnel which lay before them.
No hanging about now! Come on, let's go!
Blanche threw her ladle forcefully through the hole, stifling a sob as she jammed a paw in her mouth.
Oh, sire, me poor lord!
Troby tried to force his way past Stiffener.
Blackguards! Fiends! Let me at him!
The boxing hare winded him with a sharp rap to the stomach.
Listen to me! You lot ain't going any place but out of here. I made a promise to Lord Stonepaw, and I means to keep it. We'll get out all right, but we'll be back to free any of our pals who are alive and imprisoned. Nothing we can do now but go. I ain't letting my friend old Stonepaw sacrifice himself so we can climb back down and get killed. Is that clear? I'm in charge now, so march!
Pulling up the rope, Stiffener coiled it about his waist and snapped out orders.
Troby, you and Perlo lead off. Column of twos, I'll bring up the rear. Here, take this torch, Blanche.
Stooped almost double, they took off along the tunnel. It was wide enough to take 2 hares, but low-ceilinged, dark, and damp. Grottle came scuttling to the edge of the melee. All he could see was blue vermin pushing forward into the rift. The stunted fox nodded at Mirefleck.
So, this was where they were hiding. Have they taken this striped dog yet? Remember, the Mighty One wants him alive.
Mirefleck watched vermin trampling their slain companions while Captains Frawl and Swinch urged them on with whips.
Get through there, you slackers! Into the cave and help your mates to capture that beast! Come on, move yourselves!
Mirefleck curled her lips scornfully at the magician.
You want to find out how 'tis going, Grottle? Then why not join our brave soldiers and see for yourself, eh?
Grottle shot her a hate-filled glare, but did not move. Force of numbers had finally driven Stonepaw back into the cavern, and now they were coming at him from all sides. A quick glance told him that his hares had escaped safely. He battled on doggedly, wounded in a score of places. Snapping off an arrow which had pierced his shoulder, he roared and charged, wreaking havoc with his shattered javelin. But there was no end to the vermin. Lord Stonepaw began to feel weary and old. Frawl sneaked through with a bunch of soldiers bearing between them a large, stone-weighted net. He signaled them to climb upon a low ledge. Some others followed through, and swiftly he whispered orders to them.
See, the striped dog won't last much longer. Get behind and drive him over, close to this ledge as you can.
The plan worked. Stonepaw was beaten back. Facing his attackers, he could not see the trap that awaited him. Back, back he went, stumbling upon the carcasses of those whom he had slain on either side. Frawl shouted as the badger's shoulders brushed the ledge.
Now!
Instantly, the badger was borne to the ground by the cumbersome coils of the net and the lumps of stone tied to its edges as weights. Letting his javelin fall, he lay flat, gasping for breath. A roar of triumph arose from the vermin. Grottle hobbled through the rift to watch. Nudging Captain Swinch, the fox sniggered. "We've got him now! The striped dog's finished!" Swinch swaggered forward boldly and kicked at the prostrate badger trapped beneath the net.
"How do you feel now, striped dog? Arr!"
Wreathed in ropes, Stonepaw surged forward, crashing the horde captain into the ledge and finishing him. Grottle howled,
"Stop him! He's away again! Stop him! Stop him!"
Rearing up, Stonepaw pulled the net along with him. It was far too snarled up and heavy to be rid of. He looked for all the world like some primeval colossus from the dawn of time. Bellowing and roaring, he swept one of the big lanterns from the ledge and smashed it into the barrel of lamp oil near the entrance. Then, giving the barrel a powerful kick, Stonepaw crashed it into the rift. Flames crackled and leapt. Fearing he would be trapped in the cavern and slain, Grottle pranced about, screaming hysterically,
"Kill him! Finish him off! Hurry, you fools! Kill him!"
Stonepaw began to laugh aloud, the sound booming eerily until it filled the cavern. Dragging rocks and net, he threw himself onto the closest group of vermin, wrapping his fearsome paws about as many as he could grab. Four he held, with another three trapped in the net, to be swept along with him to the edge of the bottomless pool. They bit and scratched and stabbed to no avail. With one last war cry, Lord Stonepaw of Salamandastron summoned up his final strength and jumped.
"Eulalia!"
Grottle and the blue horde beasts packed around the pool rim. Pale green luminescence deep down in the icy water shrouded itself around the dark wriggling mass which sank down, down, down until it was lost to sight. Wordlessly they stared at the waters, the silence broken only by water dripping, flames crackling, and the agonized moans of their wounded. Thus died Lord Stonepaw, he who had ruled the mountain longer than any other badger lord. Hares halting in front of him caused Stiffener to stop sharply.
"Troby? Perlow? What's going on up there?"
he called to the leaders.
"A blue light! There's a blue light up ahead, Stiff!"
The boxing hare made his way up to the front of the column. The tunnel was beginning to tilt slightly uphill, and the stones beneath his paws contained small, shallow pools. From around a bend up ahead there shone a soft blue light. Stiffener took the torch from Blench.
"Troby, Willip, come with me. Perlow, you stop here with the others and rest yourself."
Willip sniffed the air as they drew nigh to the blue light.
"Well, great seasons of salt! There's only one thing smells like that, chaps. Seawater! Ha-ha! I was right! Listen!"
Stiffener's ears picked up the faraway sound.
"I'm harm. That's the sea, right enough."
"He went up through and chased the blue, and made it home for tea, sir. He beat the tide and spinies, too, but his mama tanned his tail fur." Troby smiled proudly. Stiffener cast a curious eye on him.
"You feeling all right, mate? Is that blue light affecting you?"
Troby chuckled happily.
"I'm feeling fine, Stiff, old chap. I was just repeating the last lines of Bramwell's skipping poem, the one about little Bob Hare, what? My old memory must be improving."
When they rounded the bend, the blue light was clearer, with water patterns shimmering off the rough rock walls. The ground began a downslope. Troby went back to fetch the others, while Willip, who was a sensible creature, summed up their position.
"Seems like we'll come out very close to the great sea. It must run up here rather strong at high tide, but this slope stops most of it. Can't be high tide now, though. This tunnel's too jolly dry. So I suppose we're all right to proceed, what? The poem says that little Bob beat the spinies, too. Any beast know what a blinkin' spiny is?"
Stiffener shrugged.
"Just have to find out as we go, Marm. Look, we don't know when high tide is due, so we'd better shake a paw."
Despite the tragedy they had left behind, The hares felt their spirits rising after being down in the gloomy caves for so long. The blue light promised a good clear day and fresh air, wind, breeze, the sight of green growing things, and most of all, freedom. They started singing to set up a good pace, sloshing through pools and stumbling over rocks, but returning to their irrepressible nature.
"There's hares on the mountain much older than I, and still they can manage to scoff the odd pie. I remember old Grandma had no teeth to boot. She used to eat rock cakes and lots of hard fruit. Older than I, scoff the odd pie, no teeth to boot, rock cake and fruit. A hare is a marvelous creature. My Uncle Alf, with long seasons, was gray. Stale puddin' and pasties'll do me, he'd say. Oh, fetch me good cider and no fancy cuts, and a big rusty hammer to crack hazelnuts. Older than I, scoff the odd pie, no teeth to boot, rock cake and fruit. Seasons was gray, pasties, he'd say. No fancy cuts, crack hazelnuts. A hare's a marvelous creature. My Auntie Dewdrop was old as the hills. She wondered why ducks always ate with their bills. Their tummies must flutter, the old gal would cry. I once knew a duck ate a dragonfly pie. Older than I, scoff the odd pie, no teeth to boot, rock cake and fruit. Seasons was gray, pasties, he'd say, no fancy cuts, crack hazelnuts. Old as the hills, ate with their bills, auntie would cry, dragonfly pie, a hare is a marvelous creature.
19. Ungat Trun was furious, though he did not let it show. Grottle, Frawl, and Meyerfleck lay flat on their faces in front of the Wildcat, each waiting to be interrogated by him. Lord Stonepaw's former bedchamber was festooned with fresh spiderwebs, flies caught by horrid vermin buzzed about, and the fire was stoked up high. Trun let his eyes wander to the spiders waiting in their webs. Flies never changed their ways. Sooner or later they would blunder into the sticky gossamer snares. The Grand Fregoral drifted silently about in the background, sprinkling powder on the braziers to make them give off blue smoke. The Wildcat flicked his tail in Captain Frawl's direction.
"Suppose for a moment that I have you executed. Then the flies would feed off your miserable remains, and my spiders would catch the flies and devour them. So, in a roundabout way, they would have eaten you. Do you agree, Frawl?"
The stoat captain, too terrified to speak, merely nodded his head in frightened agreement of the horrific idea. Ungat Trun's tail curled beneath Frawl's chin, lifting his head so they were eye to eye. The Wildcat leaned forward, a wickedly curious look upon his features.
And do you imagine that you would make my spiders become as thick and empty-headed as you?"
Frawl's throat bobbed visibly as he nodded once more. Ungat Trun poured himself a goblet of dark, damson wine, then sighed and sat back watching the spiders. Ignoring Frawl's bobbing head, he turned his attention to Meyerfleck.
"I'm disappointed in you. I was under the impression that you had the makings of a good captain. Mayhap there's time yet for you to reflect on your stupidity. What do you think, Meyerfleck? Shall I let you live? Give you the opportunity to improve your ways? Or would you like to feed my spiders?"
The rat did not stir or nod, sensing that the Wildcat was merely ruminating. She was right. Trun smiled, as if humoring Grottle.
"Ah, my faithful fox magician, you disobeyed me again. I wanted the striped dog alive. Yet I've been told that many who were down there heard you shouting for him to be slain. I know you three are telling the truth about the striped dog's death. There were too many witnesses for it to have been a lie. But think, Grottle, there's something you forgot. Can you recall what it is, my friend?"
Grottle was far too petrified to answer, though he knew his master was about to tell him. Still smiling, Trun spoke.
"What became of nearly a score of hares? Did you magic them away? Perhaps they vanished into thin air, or faded into the rocks down there. Tell me."
Grottle had no choice but to reply,
"Mightiness,
I am told there was only one of the Longears seen who escaped, helped by the Stripe Dog. What became of him and his companions, no beast can say, sire. We could find no trace of them, though we searched hard and long.
Ungat Trun disregarded the fox. He was staring at two rats who were providing the prisoners escort for Grottle, Frawl, and Meyerfleck.
Aren't you two the new recruits to my blue hordes? Refresh my memory. What are your names?
The rat with a disfigured tooth curving into his chin replied for them both.
Your Highness, we're brother sea rats. I'm Rip Fang, and this is Dumai, my kin rat.
Trun nodded as he assessed the pair.
Former pirates, eh? I like that. Well, this is a lucky day for you. I'm promoting you both to the rank of captain. Exchange uniforms with Meyerfleck and Frawl. From now on, they are to be the lowest of horde beasts. They will be your servants, bring you food, carry out your wishes, and keep both your accommodations and your kit clean. You have my permission to treat them as harshly as you please.
Stripping the uniforms from the former captains, Rip Fang and Dumai grinned in wicked anticipation. The Wildcat observed the mixture of shame and relief on the faces of his demoted officers before continuing.
Not so fast. You aren't off the hook yet, my friends. Before you take up your duties with my new captains, you will return to the cave where the Stripe Dog perished. Take our friend Grottle with you. He'll enjoy it, I'm sure. Now here's what you must do. The three of you will stay down there until you capture the hares or find out how they escaped. These two captains will take an escort to guard you. Each day that you are not successful in your task, you will be flogged with willow canes and given no food. Oh, cheer up. There's water aplenty down there, a great pool of it. You won't get thirsty. Rip Fang, Dumai, get these idiots out of my sight.
The unhappy trio were marched unceremoniously off. Ungat Trun curled his tail about the Grand Fregoral's neck and drew her close to him, purring pleasurably.
Did you see their faces? I spared them, humiliated them. They looked relieved. Then I sentenced them to a living death, and they just looked blank. I tell you, Fregoral, pleasure comes through power, and power is everything.
End of Side 4. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.